There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. We're qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faul, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 558, March 8th, 2012. Stephen?
This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Google Ads. Google Ads, click on them. You know you want to.
Thank you, Nasser. Of course, Stephen has called in sick. On today's program, why is Sebastian Vettel and Fernando Alonso seen hugging and hugging all the time in España? Ferrari issues a gag order, and Maria De Viota joins Marussia as a test driver. Now we have a special interview with GP driver Marcus Ericsson, and on top of that, we have an interview with the president of his fan club, if you can believe it or not. And this weekend, podcast number 559, we have an outstanding weekend special podcast, and that interview is with Mr. Mike Dudson. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Good to see you again.
Good to see me, too. Of course, I know we will miss the co-host during this production, but we will get through it, Nasser.
Try to reach the high standards he has set.
Exactly, exactly. Anyway, you've been super busy doing these Skype interviews, and it's almost impossible to keep up.
Yeah, Skype is working out very well, keeping me very busy. We just did an interview before the show with Mr. Bud Motter. He's a gentleman from East Coast, owns a selection of Formula One cars, and tomorrow morning, 7:30 Cali time, I'm doing an interview with Nico Müller, who is from Switzerland. This year will be racing in Formula Renault 3.5. And we're trying to set up a lot of interviews. So this is working out very good. And I just hope that listeners are also enjoying. Also in the bag, we have an interview with Thiago Monteiro, which is coming up soon. And so it should be a lot of fun and a lot of information.
Outstanding. Okay, let's get right to it. Testing in Barcelona was pretty exciting. Lotus looking pretty strong, Romain Grosjean and Kimi Raikkonen. Of course, the big story, Ferrari issuing a gag order on their drivers not to talk to the press. Some of the press actually quite frustrated not being able to approach Felipe Massa and Fernando Alonso, especially in Spain, because Fernando is always needed by the press when he's in España. What do you think is going on at Ferrari? I mean, is this car that big of a dog? Do they have to batten down the hatches and hope everything goes well when they get to Melbourne?
Well, good question. I was talking to Bud Moller, and he owns a 1980 Ferrari, and he called it the car did not win any races. It was kind of a pig. So I mentioned that this year they may have another prancing pig. So I don't know what's going on, and telling Nando not to talk to his people in his own country is not a very smart move. So they may have some issues there.
Yeah, so it could be an interesting start when we get to Australia. I'm looking forward to it. And fortunately for them, Fernando is capable of making a pig look pretty nice. You know, a little lipstick.
Like a super pig?
Yeah, a super pig. Yeah. A super piggy.
No, so, he can work around the problem and, you know, take a car that's going to finish sixth, maybe into fourth or third. There's no question about it. But if you have to do that every race, then it just gets to you. And look, from what I've heard in the Times and all that, looks like Red Bull has the, and this thing that they did, they brought out the new parts, which was, I don't know if there was mind games or what was going on there, but I got the impression that maybe they kept the real parts they were going to use till the last minute. So it looks like they have the Edge, and of course they have the Seb also.
Exactly.
Which gives them extra edge. And McLaren will be very competitive. How competitive, we will see. I just hope Lewis Hamilton has hit the delete button on his junk files in his mind.
Well, apparently he says that he's ready to go. Well, everybody says they're ready to go because they have to. But McLaren, I think they will be competitive. I hope Ferrari is competitive. If not, it'll be a good day for Kimi Raikkonen. Because with Ferrari not being competitive, Lotus looking fairly strong, depending on how well they can keep the momentum after two or three races, Kimi Raikkonen looks like he didn't need a couple of races to get acclimated. He seems to be up to speed.
Well, you know, the factory that is at Enstone, which has gone through numerous name changes, they have good quality people, but you need a lot of budget to develop new ideas or whatever you need to do with these things. I've been thinking lately, maybe, I'm not saying sandbagging, but their times may be misleading. I don't know what's going on there, but we're going to find out in Albert Park in a few days. But I think the scenery is going to be pretty much the same, Red Bull, McLaren. I just hope Mercedes is a little bit more competitive than last year. I mean, they're not like jumping with joy, Eureka, Eureka. So we'll see what happens there.
No,
and the scenery at the back will be the same, Marussia and HRT or TMX.
Mean, these teams just passed the crash test, and testing is over. HRT brought their car out. And to be honest with you, I thought the HRT looked a lot better than I expected. The nose wasn't too abrupt on the eyes. And for a low-budget team, I think they're making a big effort. Of course, they missed all of testing. But still, we'll see what happens. And speaking of Marussia, their team, their car, the MR01, finally passed the crash test. They're sort of in the same boat, the back-enders. We know how that is. But I found it interesting that they signed Maria De Villota today, or yesterday, or the day before, as their test driver. And I think I know why. But what are your thoughts on Maria?
My real non-PC thoughts on this?
Well, we're a non-PC
exactly.
podcast.
I would hate to see Formula One become a freak show, where 20 seats are, bring money and do this or, blow your hair, in the air and you get a seat and then two or three seats are reserved for, pure racing talent. So that was my first thing. I mean, this lady, she's like, as somebody
put it, 32 years old.
32 years old, and what has she done? Nothing against her, but, I mean, there are so many good drivers out there who are, there was a kid by the name of Ben Henley. He was very good. He's not in racing. He's back in karting. And there are so many good drivers still out there. They can give them a chance. And I can throw some names, but, people know who I'm talking about. There's so
right.
many talents
right. well,
out there.
Yeah, the big talk is she's 32. She's slow. She's been slow. Of course, she's raced in a number of series, including Spanish F3, Daytona 24 Hours, Super League, Formula Championship, and she test drove the R29 Renault at Paul Ricard.
Wow.
Last year. Believe it or not, Nasser.
Yeah, but Adam Hahn, who used to drive for Team Pakistan, A1GP, he was a Renault demonstration driver because his papa paid a lot of money to Flavio.
And Renault likes money and Flavio.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, you're talking about all these big races she has done. Well, Milka Duno raced in the Indy 500. She has raced at Daytona 24 Hours. So it's a pretty sad scene the way Formula One is going, bringing in people who really have not done anything in motor racing and can just, write a check and get into it.
But let's be happy for her.
Yeah, good for her. And we don't have anything personal agenda against her.
No,
we'll just
this
comment.
Could be a possible interview, Nasser.
There you go.
See, I'm thinking positive.
Yeah. And now I have not enough Spanish to say buenos dias, amiga de chica.
But no, she's pretty pumped up. She says, quote, "This is a fantastic opportunity to work closely with an F1 team and gain important experience to help me progress my beautiful and wonderful racing career."
She should be a good teammate to Pedro de la Rosa,
Well,
a 42-year-old with a...
Not only that, she's the youngest driver on the team.
Wow.
Between Nahrain Karthikeyan and Pedro de la Rosa. Yeah, she's the new kid on the block. So it's a bizarre world, but Marussia needs cash. And if they have to hire...
Everybody needs cash.
I need cash, Nestor.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so there you have it. And speaking of cash, I know these guys are some of your best friends.
Who?
Lehman Brothers.
Oh, Lehman Brothers, yeah.
Yes, well, they're back. They're paying off some of their creditors. And they're going to sell their 15.3 stake in Formula Uno.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a big deal. Who do you think is going to buy it?
Probably another investment banking house.
Well, I think it could be. It could also be Mubadala from Abu Dhabi, or
yeah, Mumtalaka. Well, these are investment basically arms of the Royal Arabian families.
And a possible Italian firm called Exor is also very interested.
Well, you know who's behind Exor.
Well, I know you're going to clear it up for me right now.
The Agnelli family, people who own Fiat.
Exactly. So. It should be interesting. Anyway, let's get back to Melbourne. I know it's hard to believe, but it's like only a little over a week away. 10 days, Nasser.
We're excited, mate.
Ugly noses, but we're going to be pumped up.
Well, you know, talking of ugly noses, we spoke to our friend, Mr. Peter Nygaard, the Danish photographer, and I asked Marcus Ericsson the same question about these ugly noses. And they're all saying, you know, you get used to it.
You do.
And you know, once the cars are on the grid, the lights are turning red. We're waiting for action. We're not going to worry about nonsense like nose or what is the color of the tire and this and that.
No, I like noses. I like women with big noses, actually. That's one of my things.
You sure? Big noses?
Love it. Absolutely. Anyway, Eric...
No wonder you have a photo of Barbara Streisand in your car.
Barbara Streisand and Charles de Gaulle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But Eric Boullier, he's pretty excited. Because, you know, when we lost Robert Kubica, who's...
No, he's still around.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know where he is, but we're not getting much news on Robert. But now they've got a new season. That terrible tragedy that happened last year, no Robert. It really put the team off. We had Nick Heidfeld, who, you know, was sort of long in the tooth. Now we've got a nice new team with... motivated people. Kimi Raikkonen, I think, is going to surprise in Melbourne. I'm telling you, and Eric Boullier believes so. He is excited, and he thinks he's going to be fighting with Red Bull and McLaren. Do you think he's having delusions of grandeur?
Oui, monsieur.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think I like his attitude better than Norbert Hogg, who says, you know, we're still not in the hunt for wins. And I don't know, when you got Schumacher and Nico Rosberg, that's a pretty good team. And Mercedes, there's some money there. There's some good development. There's some talent. I think he's going to be surprised. I think Mercedes can win in 2012.
Yeah, but you know, when you enter the barn and you're expecting an Arabian, you know, thoroughbred, and instead there's a...
There's four-legged Rubinho?
A pig there, you know, straight from Oklahoma or... you know, Hormel Farm, then, you know, you talk about attitude. Adrian Reynard and Craig Pollock had this attitude. They were going to win their first ever Formula One race. You know,
poor Jacques Villeneuve.
Yeah, so.
He suffered so much.
Attitude must have the, like, equivalent altitude, you know.
Yeah.
You have to be realistic.
So, in other words, you think Luca Montezemolo has already purchased 20 televisions? Or is
to smash
waiting?
One per race?
Correct. Or is he waiting?
No, I think if the Ferrari is not very strong, which it does not look right now, they will. I think they have the resources and Nando to develop the car and do what McLaren did last year, be competitive and respectable towards the end, you know, second half of the season.
Now, you saw those pictures of Vettel and Fernando hugging a lot. What do you think that was all about? A lot of people are putting into... They're thinking that maybe Fernando, if Ferrari doesn't deliver a good package this year, then maybe Fernando might be replacing Mark Webber at RBR. Or maybe Vettel might be going to Mercedes to replace Schumacher. There is so much talk. It's amazing. The season hasn't even started. But I was finding these photographs interesting because you know what they say. A picture is worth 1,000 words, Nasser.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And all those words are starting with L.
Correct.
Okay, well, I don't know, but I don't think Sebastian Vettel is leaving Red Bull anytime soon. As long as they're winning, it will be very silly to leave them. And the only person who left a winning team to go to another team was 2006. He became world champion, and the experiment didn't work out. Quack, quack, quack. Doom, 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 doom. But Schumacher
that's
did
That's because
leave.
He wasn't loved.
Well, that's another story, sir. No, we'll see how it works out. I have a feeling what I've been reading in the press about Ferrari is that the guy who's going to get the chop obviously is no-brainer, Felipe Massa. Frankly, I'm surprised that Massa is still there. And I have a feeling, just my own personal feeling, that if Kubica had not had his accident, he would be driving for Ferrari today.
I agree. And some people say that he's in hiding at Ferrari in the simulator.
Well, he may be doing some work, but I wish him all the best. But all I read now about Ferrari as a driver is Sergio Perez's name comes up quite a bit. And he has really, really, he's one of the very few drivers who have really done what was not expected. Normally, you expect a lot from drivers, like we did with Hülkenberg in his first year, or Grosjean, and for whatever reason, they really did not live up to expectations. Granted, they did not have the best car, but still, it was a big, major shortfall from the expectations. But in his case, he has gone just the opposite way. And he has a very strong teammate, Kamui Kobayashi. And so it's very impressive. Maybe he'll go to Ferrari. I mean, he has the support of Carlos Slim and the Telmex group. So it won't surprise me. But you know what I have a feeling is that Ferrari, of course, they have a winner in Alonso. But I will not be surprised if they go for a... They're not going to get Sebastian Vettel, and I don't think Jenson Button is going there. And Jenson Button, teammate, I don't think they will allow him to land in Maranello to start with. But I will not be surprised that if one of the young drivers from the World Series by Renault this year, or GP2, Hape Dos, as they call it, they may go for that. You know, if it's not Sergio Perez.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at people like Esteban Gutierrez, who was fastest today, anybody who has raced with him, raced against him, including teams and drivers, they have nothing but very high marks for him as a racing talent. I won't be surprised somebody like him, or there are a couple of other young kids like this guy from New Zealand, who is Richie Stanaway. He may be a year or two away, but there is a lot of talent coming through the system. So whoever is in Formula One, they really have to perform.
Exactly. Except, you know, Marussia and HRT.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, for them to show up at the track on race day, they've won their race.
Exactly. Keep up the good work. Quickly, before we go to break, we got Toro Rosso at Force India. Who do you think is really going to be fighting with the mid-pack? Because really, we've got Williams, who had such a dog season last year. Now they've got Renault. They're feeling more confident. And Senna really has to produce. He's got to protect the name. He's at Williams Renault. The pressure.
I think that he is in an environment where they want him. I think there is decent financial support there. So he will not be under as much pressure as like a Charles Pic or some of the drivers. But to answer your other question, in the mid-pack, Force India should be good. They have two very good drivers. And then there are really two driver pairings that I'm really interested in seeing and not taking any side, Hülkenberg and Di Resta, how that pans out, and the Grosjean and Raikkonen situation. So, you know, it will be interesting to see how they go. And
yeah.
And the Toro Rosso, we got two guys, and Jean-Eric Vaughan is like, you know, hey, I'm not here to make friends. That's another guy. I don't know if Red Bull... Mark Webber is pretty much in his last year with Red Bull. I will not be surprised. My call is that between Ricciardo and Jean-Eric Vaughan, I think Jean-Eric Vaughan will make a bigger impact. Just my feeling based on his performance so far, not saying Ricciardo should not perform or anything like that. So there's another guy, a Français at Ferrari.
No, it's great.
Yeah,
I'm pretty pumped up. The French are back in town and no Italians on the grid, but everybody's blaming Ferrari for that. Anyway, let's take a quick break. We've got an outstanding Motorsports Mondial, and I want to remind everybody about the interview after Mondial with Marcus Ericsson and the president of his fan club. I think this is a first in broadcast history to have the president of the fan club and the dude himself.
It's all by design, and the president of the fan club is Buwe, and it was through his help and assistance that we were able to reach Marcus Ericsson. So my thanks to both the gents.
Thank you, Nasser. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Marcus Ericsson. You're listening to F1 Weekly. Hey, I'm Marcus Ericsson. You're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King of Karachi himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and racing regards. The F1 fever starts in less than 10 days. Today we have V8 Tin Tops action from Arizona to Adelaide. While Roger Penske gets out of Dodge, Tavo gets into lawsuit in Texas. And please, if you get a chance, and I repeat, please do not miss Grand Prix The Killer Years and Velocity channel. And this channel was previously known as HD Theater. You may think you don't have it, but that's what I thought, and I'm flipping through the, you know, list, and there it is, and I clicked on it, and it came up. So please, it's Velocity Channel showing this great documentary, Grand Prix, The Killer Years, interviews with Jackie Stewart, Jackie Oliver, Nina Rindt, Jochen Rindt's widow, highly recommended. After the Mondial, we have Wrigley's Double the Pleasure Moment, an interview with GP2 racer Marcus Ericsson. And this was conducted while he was at the Circuit de Catalunya in Barcelona, and also with president of his fan club, Mr. Buwe Bovenius. And it was Buwe who made this interview with Marcus Ericsson possible. So my thanks to both the gents in Sweden. We start with Australian V8. Jamie Wincup won the race in the streets of Adelaide after Will Davison ran out of petrol on the last lap. But he was able to finish second. In the next race, second round, Will Davison did win the race over Mark Winterbottom, and I like Mark Winterbottom's nickname, Frosty. And if you're interested, you can see these races on the Australian V8 website. Okay. Yes. And, you know, around this time as this race was going on, I was contacted by Mr. Christy Hardy, our friend in Luling, Louisiana. And not sure if this will work out, but he asked me if he could interview me for his school college project.
Journalism paper, I believe.
Yeah, he was trying to do some like a profile, and so he selected me. How lucky I am. So if his work gets selected, if his writing gets selected, I told him, man, I'll be the second best known homie in Louisiana after Bobby Jindal. Quite a company there, huh?
I love it.
The NASCAR V8s, they were running in the dry heat of Arizona. Winner was Phoenix. In Phoenix was Denny Hamlin, victory number 18 for him. Second was Daytona winner Matt Kenseth. And no, Montoya did not crash into any Arizona cacti. Now we have a watch on where his car goes. Penske Racing is leaving Dodge after the season and will join the Blue Oval, i.e. Ford, for next season. You know, Dodge is now owned by Fiat. They're trying to sell that Fiat, little Fiat 500 here.
And which, and the sales have been up because of our petrol crisis.
Well, but they're still well below projections. And that car is way too small for the U.S. market, you know.
I know. It is. Yeah,
it's
I
just
know
like
you're
the
a Camry
guy. No, it's not a Camry or a Corolla thing. It's if you look at that car and the smart car, people in America are used to big things, big cars, big highways,
big
this
hot
and
dogs.
That. Big hot dogs, and that is just not a thing that is going to set in American psyche.
Well, to be honest with you, if F1 Weekly has a good year, I might buy the Abarth for myself.
With the Scorpion logo?
Yeah.
That is beautiful.
It is a beautiful car.
Yeah.
It's a little small.
Yeah.
But, now I have a question on this NASCAR race.
Si, senor.
Because it seems like such a simple format. They go round and round, and yet I am confused every time I watch one.
Why are you confused?
Now, why wasn't Danica Patrick in this race?
Well, this was the Cup race, which is the Sprint Cup, which used to be known as the Winston. Okay.
So that has nothing to do with the Nationwide.
No, Nationwide is the Hapidos of NASCAR.
So this was the Sprint Cup. Mm-hmm. Nationwide is the Hapidos. So what is the Big Kahuna?
The Big Kahuna is the Cup.
The Cup itself.
Yeah, it used to be known as the Winston Cup. That's what when it really became very famous.
Because so Danica only drives in the Cup.
No, Danica is driving mostly in Nationwide. But she is in the Nationwide, I believe she's with Dale on her junior's team. But she is doing some, if I have my NASCAR facts correct, and in the Cup, she's doing some selected events, high-profile events with Tony Stewart's team. But Smoke.
But so she wasn't in this particular race because this is just...
This was the Cup race in Phoenix.
She was the Cup race in Phoenix, and that is her home state.
Her home state is Illinois. She's from Roscoe, Illinois, but she lives in Scottsdale, Arizona now.
Okay. I'm sure I'll get further instructions on the following podcast.
No, you feel free to ask. We're here to serve.
I understand.
The listeners and the host.
Thank you very much.
The misguided host on NASCAR matters. I'm surprised you've been to Florida so many times, and you have not picked up on, fine culture of NASCAR Nation.
I'm just slow, I suppose. I'm learning, though.
Plus, you have a big Chevy truck.
I do have a big Chevrolet truck, but it does not have a restrictor plate.
Oh, I thought you had another question on this.
No, I'm done with the questions. That's as many as I could possibly come up with.
Okay, we'll continue this next week.
Okay,
British F3 preseason testing going on. Today being Wednesday, they were testing at Snetterton, where I had been with Mr. Peter Brazier. It was raining, and I'm pleased to report our friend Harry Tinknell has been very quick and also up to speed as rookie driver, but no surprise, Carlos Sainz Jr. Carlos Sainz Jr., I think he's like 16, 17 now. It's just a tremendous, tremendous racing, natural racing talent. And I think this is one apple that is going to ripe and be more tasty and successful than Pepito. And Pepito was no slouch, as you already know. And actually, one of the main reasons I'm going to the same place again, Oulton Park, for the British F3 race.
This year.
This year, next month, as the season opener, is I want to establish connection with Carlos Sainz Jr. I met him some years ago when he was in Formula BMW, but timing-wise, it didn't click to do an interview with him. But he is my number one reason for going there. And now it's time for some Texas justice. Tavo Hellman, lifelong friend of Bernie, is suing his partners at the Austin Grand Prix. What a sweet deal he had in the contract with them. An annual salary of $500,000 for the next 10 years. And this is just tip of the Texasberg. Now, the Texasberg is far more lethal than an iceberg. You probably know that.
Yeah, and I love that, having written in the contract $500,000 a year at salary.
Yeah, and then they want the state of Texas, the taxpayers of Texas,
unbelievable,
to pay $25 million.
Unbelievable.
And like the other party, people who were not interested in this race, hey, you're paying $25 million of our money with a 10% increase each year while we're laying off teachers and firefighters. So that's, and then when you read this $500,000 a year, that's what pisses me off. And it's always deals like this. And this came out when he filed the lawsuit. Wait till we get more information. And it's just going to get murky, muddy waters. Okay? I just hope when the trial begins, the jury includes Ken Anderson and Peter Windsor, who will have no problem finding blue-chip American lawyers. Would you agree on that?
Absolutely and indubitably.
Yeah. Maybe they can talk to Dr. Marco, Helmut Marco, because he's a legal expert. And, Luca Montezemolo has a law degree from New York University.
Absolutely. That's very, very true.
Yeah.
He's a New Yorker at heart.
Oh, absolutely. So let's see what happens there. Next, we come to a sinking ship. In music, we had the legend of Edmund Fitzgerald. In motorsports, we have the legend of Max Mosley. His sinking ship is the Formula 2. The low-cost series launch around the same time as GP3 is set to start its 2012 season next month. And at the moment, according to their own website, they have a grand total of 4 drivers signed. Now grab your seat and hold your horses. The names are Can we have a little drum roll, please?
I'm not too big. I don't do the Steve Faub thing.
You don't do
that? That's co-host stuff. I'm the host. No drum
rolls. Oh, my God. You are sophisticated.
Exactly.
Okay, the names of the drivers are Luciano Bacchetta and Hector Hurst from UK. And Luciano Bacchetta has been on my radar for a few years. His father, I believe, is from Sicily, but he's a UK national. And Hector Hurst was the first I heard today. And the other two drivers are David Zhu from China, so he becomes the first Chinese to be in Formula 2, and Parthiva Sureshwaran from India. He raced in the series last year also. Long gone are the glory days of Formula 2 when F1 drivers used to race in Formula 2 also. Now listen to this. They've had three championships so far. Two of the past three F2 champions are still looking for deals to race this season in single-seaters. Andy Suchek of Spain, who I believe was the first winner of the F2 series, and Mirko Bortolotti, who I'm in touch with by email, and he's trying to, you know, get something going. This really championship has not worked out the way it should have been. It started out as a low cost, and low cost in motor racing is like 215,000 pounds, so it's like close to $500,000. So I don't know how long this series will last. You cannot run a series with 5-6 drivers.
Yeah, it's sad. I thought it would develop and become an important series, but especially with Williams involved in designing the car. But in the end, GP2 is just too dominant.
Yeah, well, you know, they can blame these young drivers who get so caught up. I mean, you should look at the excitement of young drivers when you talk to them. Why are they going to GP3? Even when they don't have the right experience to go there, GP3 car is more powerful than a Formula 3 car. And you have kids who don't even do F3 and just jump into GP3. And their whole thing is all the Formula 1 team owners are watching and you're racing against Ron Dennis. And you know what? People like Ron Dennis, Dr. Marco, they don't need to look at drivers in GP3. A pure racing talent starts flashing signals when they're in karting like Nick DeVries, and they don't take 3 years to make a name. So we'll see what happens. I will not be surprised if this series falls up this year. But, we shall see. Some news on driver deals. Luca Filippi will race in IndyCar starting with the big race in May. I forgot the name. What's the big race on Memorial Day?
The big one? The roundy-roundy. It's a 2.5-mile track.
All the Indy 500.
That's it.
It's a new track record. Yeah, he's going to be with the Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan Racing. And I remember many, many years ago, I was back home, living back home. I was reading in some racing magazine. And this, I think the race, there was some problem with the race, rain or whatever. And the guy, this journalist wrote, there are only two things wrong with Indy 500. A, it's held in the wrong town, and it's way too long. So, to each his own. So, okay, and we talked about Signora Maria Di Viota as the test driver. She's the daughter of Emilio Di Viota, who made it to F1 long before Nando, and today he runs a racing school in Viva España. He also ran a championship with Formula BMW, old Formula BMW cars, and also has a team in the Spanish F3, which now has a fancy name as European Open F3 Championship.
And what was his nickname?
Emilio De Piota. That's what the British press used to call him.
See?
Thank you.
So, Maria's got at least some pedigree.
There you go. And we've heard that before. You know, and maybe if she's a Piota, she might want to contact our friend Miguel Teixeira in neighboring Portugal. He's starting to take some flying lessons. And he was telling me, I was talking to him, and he says, you know, hey, if you come to Portugal, then I'll take you on a, you know, over Monsanto Park where they used to race in the old days. So I asked him, I says, when did you get your license? He says, oh, I'm starting. So I said, maybe, you know, next November, you know, like 2000.
Yeah, let him get some practice.
Yeah, exactly. But I look forward to seeing him. I'm going to make a run back home later in the year. So I told him that I'll try to pass through Lisboa, and it'll be very nice to meet him. I have another friend who went to university here. He's also from Oporto, and he keeps telling me, you know, hey, if you ever come here, you know, show you around. So I would love to see Portugal, Algarve, and of course, Cascais and the Estoril. Autodromo. You know what happened there in 1985?
The other machismo.
Oh, yes, the real machismo. Okay, now we come to future interview of the week. Today's chat is with Marcus Ericsson. He is hoping to be the first Swede to win in F1 since the 1978 Austrian Grand Prix, which was won by Ronnie Peterson, my first racing hero. Marcus has an impressive CV, winning the Formula BMW UK and the Japanese F3 Championship. He also won a race in his very first year of GP2 competition, which is always very impressive. He will be racing again this year in GP2 with iSport International. My thanks to him for his time and cooperation. This interview was recorded while he was at the Montmelo track Monday of this week, so the audio quality is not exactly Adele in an EMI studio. But please enjoy the conversation and also join his fan club on Facebook.
Okay, folks, today on the line from Circuit de Catalunya, we have talented Swedish driver Marcus Ericsson. Marcus, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today, sir?
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm very good, actually. I'm on the racetrack, so that's always great to be on a racetrack, isn't it?
Marcus, you're at the F1 testing. What is the scene there?
Oh, at the moment now, it's everyone is packed down and the guys are leaving. It's only HRT here at the moment who's going to do some testing today. So we'll see if they get out and do some testing. But yeah, it's pretty calm. But they had some good days with F1. I was here in the weekend and it was exciting to see the F1 cars and see how they prepare for the season.
And you are also there for testing. How has the pre-season testing gone for you?
Oh, it's been good. We were in Harris last week and did some really good testing programs, and we were quick all 3 days. So yeah, so far it's been really, really good, and we just need to continue that in Barcelona, do our program, go through the different setups, and hopefully be top of the timing list and do some good race runs, etc.
Okay, you've done two seasons of GP2. What is the most important thing that you have learned, which you are taking into year three?
I mean, it's a lot of things you learn. Obviously, you need to learn the tracks and you learn how to get the most out of a one lap in a big car like GP2. So it's loads of things, and also, you know, you need to be so 100% focused and committed to be able to succeed in this category because of the competition. So it's a lot of things you learn over the years, but now I feel I'm ready to fight at the top of the championship and try and win it.
And last season, how would you rate the season for yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being best?
I think in the end, when I look back at it, it would probably be 7 maybe, because it was not the greatest stress-filled-wise season, but still we had some very good performances and a 7 is that would be my answer, yes.
And is that view shared by Mr. Kenny Breck, your manager?
I'm not sure, but yeah, I think he was a bit like me, you know. Maybe the rest of us was not as what we hoped for, but still, you know, we had a good, so many good performances during the season, so I think he will be agreeing quite good with that.
Okay, and you are also there, of course, for your own testing in GP2. Is your manager, Mr. Kenny Bragg, still encouraging you with the humming of guitar?
Yeah, I mean, Kenny is great. I mean, he's doing a lot of things, but he's actually coming down to the test now and to have a look how we're doing. So Kenny's still around and still doing a great job.
Okay. Now, last year, the main GP2 season, what were your preseason expectations, and at the end of the season, how did you evaluate your season?
I mean, I would have hoped to be, you know, top 5 in the championship, I would say, but as the year went on, we didn't really have the results maybe that we wanted. We had some bad luck, and I did some mistakes myself, but in the end, you know, how the season sort of adapted, you know, it started quite rough, and then it went better and better all the time. So I think when you look back at it, I learned a lot, and that's things that I would bring on for this year. And it was, all in all, it was not too bad season, and hopefully this year we should have an even better one, and then, you know, take the experience from last year.
Okay, in your first season of GP2, you were with Supernova. And I believe you had your win in Valencia. And very few drivers get a GP2 win in their first year. And then you left the team for iSport International. What was the reason behind the switch?
I mean, it was a difficult decision. Obviously, Supernova was a great team, and they helped me a lot to adapt to the GP2. But for me, it was, I don't know, we got a good contact with iSport, and they seemed really interested and keen to run me. And
driver, let me ask you a question. Is it tough to win a race against a rookie or a teammate? Or would you prefer that the challenge for victory or podium comes from a driver who's not your teammate?
It's a difficult question, but I mean, to be honest, you need to be able to work very good with your teammate. And with Palmer, we've started a very good relationship now in the testing, and I think we can be working together in a good way. And by doing that, give the team good results for both drivers.
Okay, now, you had some sort of a situation in Monte Carlo last year with your teammate Sam Bird, and iSport went through a similar thing with Timo Glock and Andreas Zuber at Manicourt some years ago. Will you please tell our listeners what happened?
No, I mean, Monaco, to be honest, was a bit of a disaster weekend for iSport, and we had two bad races. Actually, already started in qualifying where me and Sam got together and made contact in the qualifying, and then for the race again we made contact. So obviously that's something that you should never do, but still, you know, in motorsport it sometimes happens. But to be honest, iSport handled the situation extremely well, and we had a very serious talk after this weekend with both drivers and the team, and we moved on stronger than before. And I think that was the great thing. You know, you always need to take the positives out of situations as well and learn from it, and that's what we did.
Okay. Now, Sam Bird has moved on to Formula Renault 3.5. You guys still friends? Do you guys still go out for fish and chips?
I mean, we still talk. It's not a problem at all with me and Sam, you know. So that's nothing, you know, not a problem. But to be honest, in the racing, I'm not really here to make friends, you know. It's for your work, you know, and you focus on that. But for me and Sam on the personal side, it's no problems at all.
You said something interesting, that you are not in racing to make friends. But when something like this happens where you know, it's a high-profile race, Monte Carlo, and you have a situation, regardless of who's at fault, how long does a driver stay kind of pissed off? How long it takes to get over it?
I mean, it's very important that, you know, of course you get disappointed and you can get angry, but it's very important that you can let it go quickly and focus forward, you know, focus on the next challenge and focus on the next race or whatever, you know. So that's something that you need to work on, and I think that's something that both me and Sam did. You know, we had the accident, we were a bit angry at each other, but, you know, we moved on and we learned from it.
Okay. Now, last season, what was your best race and what was the worst weekend for you apart from Monte Carlo?
I think the best weekend probably was Silverstone, I would say. But the best weekend should really have been in Hungary when I was leading the feature race on the Saturday. And unfortunately, we got a drive-through penalty for a very fine line decision for an unsafe release. And we lost the win that we should have had in the feature race. So that could have been a great weekend, and should have been a great weekend. But anyway, that was what happened. And then the worst weekend, Monaco is difficult to compete with, to be honest. But I think Monza was not the greatest of weekends either, if I had to pick someone else.
Okay. Now, last year, you were second in the GP2, the non-championship event in Abu Dhabi. What is your impression of that facility and the area?
It's amazing to be in Abu Dhabi. It's always a nice race weekend. I think what they've done there to build a complete new track and with all the facilities around it, it's been amazing, you know, and it's always good racing there. So it's a big change that we're not going there this year, I would say. For sure, it's a big change.
Did you go to the Ferrari World?
Yeah, I tried to throw the world with a roller coaster, and it's mega impressive.
Really? Does it go really fast?
Yeah, I mean, it's the acceleration of that thing. It's very, very impressive. And I think if any one of the listeners are going to Abu Dhabi for the race weekend, you should have a go in the Ferrari World roller coaster.
Yeah, and talking of listeners, you know, we have listeners even in Sweden. And Bouvet, president of your fan club, was telling me you have members in the U.S. also, which is very interesting. A question I have is, which country apart from Sweden has the most fans of Marcus Ericsson?
It's a difficult question. I think, to be honest, it's difficult to say, but in Japan, I think I have quite good support after I did the 1 year there with Tom Stryota. And in Japan, the fans are incredible, you know. They're so fanatic and they're so supportive. So I hope and think that I have some good fans in Japan and obviously also all over the world.
Great. Now, you have raced at Valencia, Monte Carlo, and Macau, three classic street circuits, very different. Which one is more fun and which one is most challenging for a driver?
I think Macau for me is the favorite place, the favorite track. You know, every lap around Macau is just amazing, and it's difficult to beat that, to be honest. Obviously, Monaco is also great and also Valencia, but...
Okay, great. Now that you are at the Circuit de Catalunya, how is the atmosphere there? I mean, you're from Scandinavia. Have you tried to have a chat with your fellow Scandinavian, Mr. Kimi Räikkönen?
I didn't meet him, to be honest, but I was out watching him drive, and he looked really, really confident and really good in the car, so I hope that that Kimi can be strong this year. It would be good for everyone, I think, and I think he will be strong. I mean, he showed in the test he was quickest on the last day, if I remember right, so he should be strong this year, and I really hope so.
Now, in the reports, I hear that Ferrari does not seem to be very quick. Is that the impression you also get?
Yeah, I mean, they seem to have some problems, but I'm sure they will figure it out for the season.
Okay. Now, during the season, do you live in England, as do most of the drivers, or are you living in your own hometown, Kumla?
The last few years I've been living in Norwich, close to the team, but this year I've decided to live in Sweden and in Kumla, my hometown, and going to be still, you know, traveling a lot to England. But it's only, you know, a two-hour flight to London from Sweden, so it's not a big deal, really. And it's important that I'm in Sweden a lot as well to keep looking after my sponsors and everything like that. So that's my decision for this year, and I will see in the future where I end up.
Yes, and talking of future, obviously I would like to see you in Formula One, as I've been following your career since your days in Formula BMW UK. Where would you like to see yourself? I'm sure the goal is Formula One, but what is your game plan for next season?
I mean, for me now, it's the third year of GP2, and to be honest, this is a make or break year. We really need some really good and strong results this year, and then if we get that, we need to try and look and get into Formula One. That's the aim for us, and it's only going to happen if we work really hard and have a bit of luck on our side as well, you know. But for sure, you know, we hope to get to Formula One for 2013.
Great. Now, you know, Marcus, let me ask you this. I'm a lifelong racing fan, and what I have noticed, talented drivers like yourself and, you know, Jules Bianchi and many others, they have a lot of success like you do. And when they come to GP2, winning a race is very rare. Is it really that difficult in GP2? Is it the car? Is it the tires? Or is it the competition? Why is it that even talented drivers have a tough time winning races?
I think it is because GP2, obviously, is the biggest feeder series of Formula 1. It's all the best talents are here, and it's really, really difficult to win and dominate a series like that. So I think that's probably the reason. But then also, of course, the cars are quite difficult to drive, quite difficult to get on the limit, and also the race weekends, how it looks, you know, with a half-an-hour practice, half-an-hour qualifying, it's not much time to adapting, you know. You need to be on it directly, and it is difficult, and it takes some time to get used to, but that's why, you know, it is a big series. It's only the best that's going to win, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, and talking of the car, this year they're going with a different tire compound, pretty much like the Formula One program. Is that presenting more of a challenge for drivers like yourself?
Yes, I believe so, because now, as you said, we're going to have an option and a prime tire for every weekend. So it's going to be a bit of a challenge now, how you have the strategy for the weekend and how you're going to use the different tire compounds. So it's another step of, bigger challenges in GP2, but it's great, you know, because then you need to even work harder, you know, and even be more precise in everything you do, and that's it's a good thing.
Okay, and among the drivers in the 3 years you have been in GP2, who do you think are tough competitors?
Sorry, one more time.
Among the drivers you have raced in GP2 past two seasons, who are the drivers you would consider as tough competitors?
I think from the drivers I raced in GP2 so far, I think Romain Grosjean is the best driver I raced. He's incredibly fast and very strong in the races, and I think he will do very well in F1 this year. And obviously, it's lots of good drivers that's been in GP2 and still are. So, but Grosjean, I think, would be my pick.
Okay, it's I would pretty much agree with you. You have come from a karting background. Are there any young Swedish drivers? I know there is Timmy Hansen and Felix Rosenqvist, but are there any other young drivers who are on the verge of getting into single-seaters who are very good?
I'm not too sure. I don't have all the facts, but I think there is one guy in Sweden called Robin Hansson who is doing very well in karting, and he should be strong in the future. I hope there is more coming. I have my youngest brother. He's just turning 10 this year, and he's doing karting. So hopefully he will be coming to single-seater in the future and do well in racing.
Oh, I did not know you had a younger brother. What's his name?
I have two younger brothers. One is Pontus, one is Hampus. And Hampus is the 10-year-old who is doing karting. So Hampus Eriksson, you need to remember that name.
Well, I would like to talk to him also. That will be very interesting. Great, great.
Sorry?
Yeah. So what is your agenda now? Do you have more testing schedule, or what's going on with you in Barcelona?
Yeah, we have now 3 days of testing now in Barcelona. And it's the last test before the season kicks off in Malaysia. So it's very important days here that we get the through of programs and try different things with the setup to make sure we have the best possible setup when we get to Malaysia. So, no, it's going to be very important days, but I'm looking forward to it a lot.
Okay. Now, a lot of drivers in GP2 and other series have some sort of a hookup with a Formula One team to do some computer simulation. Do you have some deal with the Formula One team at this time?
No, I'm not with a Formula One team at the moment, but we use with the simulators and stuff. We work also with iSport. We have our own simulator which we work with in between weekends to prepare ourselves, and it's a very good tool to get prepared for a race weekend for sure.
Okay, now I think it's been a while since we last met. I want to ask you the same question again. Have you made a trip to the United States since we met last time?
No, I haven't, and that's a big shame. I really want to go to America, and I hope to do it this year sometime, but I haven't been there yet, so it's a big shame, but I'm sure I'll be there soon.
Well, we offer this deal to all the people we talk to. We are in San Francisco area, so if you ever come to San Francisco, you will have a choice. Chinese food or Mexican food will be on F1 Weekly.
That sounds fantastic. I will remember that.
Yes, and most important, when you win the championship and you have a big Swedish meatball party at Norfolk, please don't forget me and Bouwe and your manager of your fan club.
No, I will. I will not forget that. You will be invited, no problem.
Okay, thanks. Finally, how about a message to listeners of F1 Weekly, please?
Yeah, I mean, I hope you guys will continue to support me and cheer me on this year, and hopefully I will do some really good and entertaining racing on the track and keep you all happy, you know. But please cheer me on and help me to win the championship this year.
Okay, great. Marcus, that should do it. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay, that was Marcus Ericsson straight from Catalunya Circuit in Barcelona. Viva España. And now we go to Linköping for a clear landing for a conversation with president of his fan club, Mr. Bue Bivonius. And, you know, he will give us some behind-the-scene action and information on his fan club. My thanks to him for arranging the interview with Marcus and also for taking the time to talk to us.
How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks.
Great. Okay, before we talk about your fan club that you have for Marcus Ericsson, will you please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself? First of all, what part of beautiful Sweden are you in?
Situated in Linköping, 200 kilometers south of Stockholm. And, my occupation is I'm an air traffic controller, so I'm not involved in racing at all, or weren't involved in racing at all before the Marcus Ericsson event. So that's a bit about me.
Okay, now tell us what led you to establish the Marcus Ericsson fan club, and when was this done?
It was quite, it was just a coincidence. It was when Marcus was in Japan doing the Formula 3 series there. He then did a blog in a Swedish newspaper, Aftonbladet. And I started to cheer him up and cheer for him there and started to write there. And then just after he won the championship, I found a Facebook group founded by Alexander Jönsson in Sweden. Had about 50 members. I didn't know Marcus at all. I had never met him. But I asked to be a co-admin at the group. And then I started to gather information, photos and videos and stuff like that. So in the beginning of 2010, I changed it from a Facebook group to a fan page. And from there, it has accelerated. I got contacted by the management behind Marcus, and they said, you're actually not supposed to do this because, Marcus is a label, but you're doing it so well, so you may continue. And from there on, I went to Barcelona to the GP and thought I would do something unique. So I sat on the grandstand and live blogged to people back in Sweden and all over the world. I was pretty amazed because I had 70 people listening to me, what I was writing. And little did I know, because I did the same thing at Spa in the autumn. And then I had 1,400 over race weekend. So from there, it has just accelerated, I must say.
Very good. That's very impressive. And when you talk about Marcus' management contacted you, was that wonderful Mr. Kenny Breck himself calling you?
It was actually Kenny's manager from when he raced. He has been involved as well in Marcus's, the promotion of Marcus. So the first time I met Kenny and Marcus was in Barcelona in 2010. So from there on, nothing of this would have been possible without social media, because Facebook. We have the Facebook page. We incorporated it into Marcus's web page. We have a Twitter feeding from the fan club out to Twitter, YouTube account. And this autumn, Marcus started tweeting. So we feed that tweet into the fan club. And last year it went official fan page. So now Marcus owns it and I run it.
Oh. As far as the fan club is concerned, how many approximate numbers, how many fans you have, and what's the breakdown? Are they mostly in Sweden, or what's happening here?
Right now we have 2,900 fans from 66 countries.
Wow.
Speaking over 20 languages. So it's pretty amazing. Like I say, without social media, this would not be possible.
No, it is very, very impressive. You know, here I am sitting in a small town in Northern California and talking to you far away in Sweden. And so do you have some specific numbers apart from what percentage are the fans from Sweden and what are the major countries where he has a fan base?
Yeah, he has a fan base from, I'd say, from Mexico to Malaysia. They're all over the world. Part in Sweden, of course, and Great Britain, Spain, Indonesia, Mexico, Italy, Norway. So it's spread all over the world. And 23 in the USA.
Oh, that's very good. Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. And I have met, you know, we interviewed Marcus some years ago, and I also met him briefly at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix a couple of years ago. Very nice, very good driver and a very nice kid. I really like him and wish him all the best. So now, do you get requests from, quite a few requests for like autographs or, you know, something from fans from Marcus?
Yeah, they're coming, some of them. But I think most don't realize, they think that we are quite a lot of people involved in the Marcus Ericsson fan club. Actually, it's a one-man show, or since Marcus started tweeting, it's a one and a half men. So I'm doing this on a zero budget. I pay for my travels myself. So I think many think that we are lots of people producing the material, but it's just me so far.
Is there any cost to join the Marcus Ericsson Club?
No, everybody is welcome.
Well, I certainly hope you pick some more members after we post your interview. And like I said, Marcus is not only a good driver. I mean, he won the Japanese F3 Championship. Actually, you know, I've been following his career since he was in Formula BMW UK. And we certainly need another race-winning Grand Prix driver from Sweden.
Yeah, we hope that he will take the last step on the ladder. Mm-hmm. So just keeping our fingers crossed.
Good, good. Have you had a chance to sit down someday and talk to Kenny Breck also?
Yeah, we met out on the races. Last time was in Spa last year, I think. So Monza last year. So we meet on the GP weekends mostly, and we talk on the phone as well, of course.
And Marcus is from a town called Kumla. How far is that from where you are?
It's about 150 kilometers.
And does he spend much time during the racing season in Kumla, or is he mostly in UK?
He has an apartment in UK, so mostly when there are short times between the race weekends in UK, but he visits home as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. Okay, what can you tell our listeners about Marcus Ericsson, more specifically the man, the young man, not the race car driver, that people may not know about him, like about what he does in off-season, or anything interesting?
Yeah, like we didn't interview 2 weeks ago, so we took out, he has a rally car, does a bit of practice with that, just to keep, get seat time, and he has been involved in the development of touring car here in Sweden. We had one touring car championship before, Swedish touring car championship, and in 2012 there will be another called TTA, Elite Series of Racing, and he has been down in France to develop the car and help them, not just set up the car, but they changed the rear wing and stuff like that. And like you said, it was the first time he drove a car with a roof. But he said that it will be an interesting car and an interesting series. So I'm looking forward to it, seeing it this year.
Now, is Marcus planning to do any of these Tin Tops races?
No. Like I said to him, you're welcome back in Sweden in the car that you developed in 15 years' time. Before that, the other series, I hope.
Yeah. Now, apart from the sponsorship issue, which is always a thorn in any series anywhere in this world, how is the karting system in Sweden? Is it very well developed? Is that a good system for young kids to, in terms of opportunities and karting tracks all over the country?
Yeah, there are karting tracks from southern Sweden to the northern parts. And there are three series, the southern, the mid, and the northern parts. There are tracks, and there are many good drivers in the series. And now lots of them go to Italy to race in the Italian Open and practice in Spain and Italy now during low season. So, yeah, there are lots of up-and-coming drivers.
Great. Now, just an idea. I don't know how involved you are with young other Swedish drivers. What I see a lot of young drivers do, everybody wants to get to Formula One. And I'm not referring this to any particular driver here. And, it's so few seats available, so much money. And I see a lot of young, talented kids who just keep chasing that dream. And, of course, every season you race, it's a lot of money. I'll give you a very interesting example. 2 years ago, which would be 2010, there is this Finnish kid by the name of Petri Suvanto. He came from karting and raced in Formula BMW Europe in 2010. And the success was not what he was expecting, given his very good karting career. And he struggled and did the best he could, but he made a very smart move, which I thought was very good for him. He moved here in the U.S. and raced in a series called U.S. Formula 2000. And, winning is never easy whether you race in America or Angola, but the depth of competition in Europe is very, very intense, especially at entry level. So I think, young Swedes who are quick and are looking to become a professional driver, they should look at U.S. entry level series also, because right now Mazda, and I'm not with Mazda or U.S. Formula 2000, but they have a system here that if you win the U.S., which is basically a Formula Renault type car, if you win the Formula 2000 for next step, which is Star Mazda, you get a fully funded drive from Mazda. And if you win that series, you get a fully funded drive in Indy Lights. So if somebody is very talented, they can make a pretty good case to a top-line team in IndyCar racing or sports car racing, that, hey, I'm available and I can win. Just an idea.
Yeah, I think that since motorsports in Sweden is, let's say, to be generalizing, it's not many are thinking about the environment, and it's something ugly to be doing motorsports. And the only thing that I think the general audience know is Formula One, and that therefore there has been a very unsound focus on just Formula One. It's the ultimate series here in Europe, so everybody's talking just. I don't know how many times Marcus has had to answer the question, when will we see you in Formula One? And he's always saying that I'm focused on right now. I can't be focusing on, of course it's the ultimate goal, but you can't be thinking of it every time you step into a car, because that could block you if you think that I must do this race, win this race, to be in Formula One. You have to be open to other series as well. Definitely US as well.
Yeah. And, you know, your man, Kenny Breck, you know, won the Indy 500 here. Stefan Johansson was very successful. So it's a good avenue for a lot of good talented drivers. Now, the Swedish Touring Car Championship, this is a pretty well-established series. Do they get good TV coverage?
Yeah. Through the pay channel Viasat Motor, which has, unfortunately, it's mostly us who are already motorsport fans, but they have amazing coverage of Swedish Touring Car Championship, the Formula One, and so on. So it's, yeah, they have very good coverage of it.
Yeah. Okay, another very famous rally driver from your country was Stig Blomqvist, and his son is also very talented, Tom, are the Swedish people. And his story is interesting. He's, I don't know if he was born in New Zealand, but that's where his mother lives, and that's where he calls home. He's racing with a British license. Are the Swedes trying to be claim jumper on him that Tom Blomqvist is Swedish?
Unfortunately, I don't think very many know of Tom Blomqvist, but of course we will consider him Swedish when he wins.
Of course,
it's like with Nico Rosberg. I spoke to some Finns, and I asked them, "Do you consider Nico Finnish or German?" Well, when he wins, he's Finnish. Otherwise, he's German.
Okay, so far he's been German in Formula One racing then.
Yeah.
No, actually, you know, that's an interesting thing you bring up, because when Nico, I knew he was racing in karting because of his father's name, and I followed his career from early days. And, you know, then it was just Nico Rosberg, Keke's son. But when he came into like GP2, I think, I'm not even sure if it was brought up in GP2, but for sure when he came to Formula One and it was Nico Rosberg, German, I said, oh, wow. That was kind of a surprise for me.
Yeah.
Okay, Bouvet, I thank you so much for your time.
I can just mention that the fan clubs, I keep a track of, and I'm a member of all the fan clubs of the GP2 drivers, of course, just to keep a track on them. And there is just one driver who has a bigger fan club, and that's Esteban Gutierrez. So we're number two.
Just like, oh, you know, since you are number two, you should approach Avis for sponsorship. That used to be their slogan, we're number two.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, great. And I tell you, you have mentioned a very interesting name, Esteban Gutierrez. Here's a kid, his career also I have followed since Formula BMW days. And he started his motor racing career here in the United States in that series. Does Marcus ever talk to you who he thinks his main challengers will be? Because I think these two have the best chance of winning the championship, and so does Luca Filippi, because he has a lot of experience.
Yeah, that was two of the names we brought up in the interview. Esteban, of course, and also David Valsecchi. Will be interesting to see. Just half the field, half of the chairs are filled right now. Will be interesting to see who will join the series. But I think Esteban will be one of his main contenders for the title this year.
Do we know who Marcus's teammate is?
Yeah, Jolyon Palmer.
Jolyon Palmer, okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, Bouvet, very nice to talk to you, sir. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
And keep them coming, landing in straight line, please.
I will, I promise.
Okay, thank you and good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Nass, thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And, of course, thanks for more great interviews. Let's just go right to the wrap-up. I want to mention our Motorsports Memories calendar, one and only. I know it's March. I know the Formula One season is about to start, and calendars really should be done with. But if you want one, email us, and we might be making a deal for you. Anyway, we want to mention our Facebook and Twitter sites. We're also on Google Plus, and just do a search for F1 Weekly and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email me at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Good night.
Bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.